Michigan State University President Luanna Simon recently welcomed the 12th freshman class to East Lansing since taking over the top spot here at MSU. In what's become a late summer ritual, she spent much of the weekend traveling the campus in a golf cart, greeting, assisting, and talking with new and returning students and their families. President Simon recently told an interviewer that Michigan State, quote, is in a good space, we're not in a perfect space, unquote. The good news is no secret. MSU continues to create a higher profile with sports fans around the country with its notable success on the football field. It also proudly points to developments like the FRIB Particle Accelerator and its popularity with international students. To learn more about that good space and what lay between it and that perfect space, we welcome President Luanna Simon to Current State. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Do you enjoy making the rounds on the golf cart on move-in weekend?
It really is fun to experience that rite of passage that happens for 7,800 freshmen and a few transfer students for that weekend. We've gotten much more efficient, so there's less need to sort of cart things around or talk to people because parking has become more efficient. They have plenty of carts now. And we even had Disney there to give us some more pointers on how to make it a better experience for parents.
How bad of a time can you have in a golf cart? That's really kind of what it boils down to.
Well, it's not bad. It's much better than walking from Hubbard Hall to Brody. But it's a good experience. And so we just sort of have some congestion at elevators. But we're now, as you know, providing meals for all of the parents and their students and the rest of their entourage. So it's a good chance for them to have a space to share a meal and then sort of get the room outfitted.
It's a unique opportunity, it strikes me, to connect with students and their families. Is it a good window on MSU students and their families?
It's a good window about how young they are.
Are they getting younger?
They're getting younger, but there's a sort of a part of enthusiasm and scared cautiousness.
Sure.
About all of that experience, and it's also a good way to know that the parents are very much a part of Team MSU.
You told the Detroit News Dan Howes about a week ago that MSU is in a good space, we're not in a perfect space. What could be improved? What are you focused on?
Well, obviously we need to continue to enhance our academic profile. We need to make sure that the capital campaign is very successful. To close some of the gaps on scholarships and endowed chairs. And we also need to just continue to make sure that we are a very high value in the context of worldwide higher education.
How do you enhance an academic profile?
Well, part of that is through the work that we do, the scholarship of our faculty. The second is through the engagement with the community. And the third is through being very innovative around education, both graduate and undergraduate.
And in yesterday's Lansing State Journal, we read of the upcoming public phase of a $1.5 billion capital campaign to begin next month. Help our listeners understand the importance of that.
Well, if you think about the resources that universities need to be competitive, I think everyone would want Michigan State University to remain among the top universities in the world. That was really John Hanna's dream when he got Michigan State into the Big Ten, was not simply to play football, but to be part of a very, very strong academic group. The University of Chicago remained as part of the CIC, and those academic collaborations were very important to John Hanna because he believed very firmly, as I do, that a place with Michigan State University's values, with its orientation toward opportunity across socioeconomic spectrum, needed to be among the best places in the world. And we needed to be international when he appointed the first Dean of International Studies and Programs in 1957. So we've taken pages out of that playbook and fast-forwarded them to the future. But what we know with our competition is that the recruitment of talent is very, very stiff. And then in order to do that, you need endowed positions as well as endowed scholarships. And we need to close that gap.
And we have fewer than many other schools,
right,
in the Big Ten.
One of the things that I think as an institution, our Big Ten colleagues in particular, the AAU institutions, began aggressively raising money back in the 30s. And that was something that we simply did not do. President Hanna felt that we might lose our land grant heart with taking money from people who were so rich, and we would lose our commitment to across socioeconomic class. So we didn't really have our first significant capital campaign until much later than our peers. So money begets money, and we have to have a pattern of closing that gap.
We're speaking with MSU President Luanna Simon today on Current State on WKAR. How much does MSU's athletic success factor into fundraising efforts?
I think it helps to continue to raise the profile of Michigan State. But more importantly, it's not simply winning, it's winning with the right people and having the representing the right values. So if you looked at the Wall Street Journal article about brand, you can see some programs that are really winning, but their brand isn't as high because their view of the integrity of the program isn't where it should be. So you have to have both in order to be successful.
Well, let's go a little deeper on that topic. You're now serving as chairwoman of the executive committee of the NCAA. A month ago, to the day, I believe, Judge Claudia Wilkin ruled in the O'Bannon case that barring many college football and basketball players from earning money off their names, images, and likenesses violates antitrust law. It seems like we're moving in a direction where college athletes could be compensated beyond a scholarship. How do you feel about where things are headed regarding NCAA athletes?
Well, I really cannot comment on the O'Bannon case. That I would simply point out that 3 years ago, the D1 board did approve cost of attendance as a way of providing additional support for student athletes. That happened to have been overridden by the membership, which is part of the, because it is a membership process. And the recent change in governance in the NCAA that permits the five conferences to have more autonomy. I think one of the things that you'll see out of that is an attention to the welfare of student athletes, which will include, I think, a proposal for full cost of attendance.
Can you talk any more about changes you would support and changes you might resist?
Well, I think what we're going to see is some things that Michigan State has already been doing. We will see, I think, a proposal that, again, was supported by the D1 group but not necessarily adopted by the full D1 membership to be sure that student athletes who meet institutional requirements academically, behaviorally, as well as team requirements, would have a full four-year scholarship. You've seen that at Michigan State over the years, and that's, I think, important for students to be able to complete their degrees. I think you'll see changes in support after graduation, but we now at Michigan State provide support for people who have completed their eligibility, but have not graduated to come back and finish their degrees. So there's lots of things like that that we've been a part of, along with greater care for health and safety, particularly with concussions, are things I think are very positive will come out of this.
Well, let's focus on two of the biggest revenue-generating sports, football and men's basketball. Last April, we had two MSU law professors who wrote an oft-cited law review article on the subject of whether college athletes are employees, and they argued on our show that given the demands of on these athletes' time, some 40-plus hours a week in some cases, their primary purpose here is not as students but as athletes. Why aren't they employees, in your view, with so much time and money involved?
Well, I think that if you look at their time and effort, some of the hours that are cited are individual decisions, but the focus for us is that the greatest value for them is the value of their degree, and you can see that by the lack of people who actually are successful at the professional level. What they have left for them is the value of their degree.
Earlier this year, it was made public that MSU was one of more than 50 universities across the country that's being investigated by the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights for the university's handling of sexual assault on campus. What was your reaction when you initially found out that MSU was under investigation?
Well, I think it was interesting because one of the cases was 4 years old and had been resolved by the regional office. We had also been in contact over that period of time with the regional office to share with them what we were doing and had not received any feedback from the regional office that somehow things were off track. But more importantly, so let me step back. More importantly, I think we'll announce today that 10 years ago, soon after I became president, you know, we had a task force on sexual assault, sexual harassment. There were a series of recommendations that were made that have been implemented over time. Times have changed. This is still a very, very serious issue that affects the success of not only people who are engaged directly, but those around them. And we need to continue to find ways to eradicate sexual assault, sexual violence. And so the task force will look at our work and will continue to find ways that we can strengthen our programs, as we have over the last 10 years, to continue to adjust those in ways that make them stronger.
Is it fair to say that the university is in less than a good space when it comes to the handling of sexual assault?
I think that we are in a good space, but not a perfect space. Because if you look at the programs and if you would look at the McCaskill survey that she sent out, we were able to respond to almost every question that we had programs that were addressing that. The work that that the police department did in 1992 was actually cited by an institution as being an exemplar for something they just simply did recently. So those programs are in place. They're not as effective as we want them to be. And we've also are dealing with social media and lots of other things that we weren't dealing with when some of those programs were put in place. So we need to continue to work at this to be sure that we can have everything available to students to support them in the unfortunate circumstances that they are a victim of sexual assault. And we also need to better educate and continue to educate the community about their responsibility, not simply to not engage in those activities, but to help stop others from engaging in those activities.
Luanna Simon is our guest here today on WKAR's Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. With sequestration and other budget cuts, research dollars are more scarce. Some have told us here on Current State the cuts are bad enough. They're driving some scientists out of their labs for good. What's the climate like out there for research dollars?
It's very, very difficult. I think also it's the lack of predictability. Sequestration in particular took trajectories of research fundings in the out years and put them at risk. And when you think about your research program, you plan many years in advance, you make commitments to people on your grants many years in advance. And this unpredictability, this sort of sudden changes are very, very disruptive. Also in the case of NIH, the average age for getting an independent R01 grant has escalated to near 40, which is really an area that's of great concern to me because we lose our effectiveness as a nation in leading research by putting off for so long in a career the opportunity to act independently.
Talk to us about the higher profile of the many international students that are currently on the Michigan State campus. How do you regard this change?
Well, we're a global community, and China will obviously be a very important part of the world of our students for the next 20, 30 years. So I think it's very important that they, as a part of Michigan State, are able to experience that. Some of the differences, I think, are cultural. Some are with some different wealth profiles, but I think overall we're learning how to better take full advantage of the presence of those international students, and I think that will continue in the future. The numbers have sort of leveled off a bit.
How long do you expect to be university president?
For a while.
The capital campaign lasts until 2018. It was pointed out in the State Journal article yesterday that it's not considered productive for a university president to resign before the conclusion of a major capital campaign. Can we assume you're likely to be in the president's office till 2018?
Well, Roy and I are both personally committed to the success of the capital campaign, and I'm professionally committed to the success of the capital campaign. But you have, in order to do this work, you have to have great passion, you have to have great energy, and you have to have the support of the people around you. Roy and I care deeply about Michigan State and its success, and so those are factors that will move forward. My contract is one that it doesn't have an end date on it, so I think people can assume that we'll try to give it our best shot and make that as successful as possible.
I meant to ask you earlier, the capital campaign has a $1.5 billion goal attached to it. How is that number arrived at? Why that number and not a lower or higher number?
Well, I think most institutions set a goal that they believe they'll succeed, have success before the end of the campaign. We still have not developed the national framework for aggressive fundraising that our peer institutions have. We're just beginning to do that. And so most of our alums are in Michigan. They're still many of them are a bit wobbly from Michigan being the epicenter of the recession. And so it's a conservative goal, but one that we think that we can be very, very successful with, and it might in the future be raised. But it's a working target at the moment. The board will take official action in October.
You've been explicit about how much energy and commitment your job requires. How is your health?
As of today, it's great.
You're looking well right now.
It's great.
You must have days when it gets to be too much. How do you handle those days?
Well, I think that it's turned out that when Roy and I have one of those days and we go eat in the residence hall and students come up and we talk to them, then you sort of become recommitted to why you're here. And they re-energize you.
You refer to Roy a lot. What is his role here? Talk to us about the importance he has.
Well, I think no one in this kind of role can be successful without someone who's an extraordinary partner. And if you think about the number of events that we do, the work that has to happen, you need an extraordinary partner in that work, and so Roy is that. He's also the director of transportation, telecommunications, and landscape for the campus, so he has a full-time job at Michigan State. And so we kid sometime that being the spouse of the president adds a half time to that.
we haven't talked about FRIB at all here, and I meant to bring up FRIB before now. In your travels, how do people regard the FRIB? Do they understand it? Do they understand its importance in your view?
I think the answer to that is yes. I think putting together the statewide advisory committee was very important to being sure that we had a bipartisan east-west, north-south support for FRIB that continued beyond just simply getting the project. And our alums around the country, actually around the world, often that's a question they ask about how we're doing. Because it's important as a project because the first light of the cyclotron was 50 years ago. So this is something that we've been doing really well for a very long period of time. But winning this huge project at a time when the state was in pretty low spirits and prior to some of our athletic success, was really an important statement about the academic prowess of Michigan State. And the project is at this point on schedule. We've been cleared for what's called CD-3B, which is the design of all of the accelerator and experimental equipment that goes within the physical facility. So we're there targeting a completion date of 2022. We're going to try to manage to an early completion of 2020 because time is money, but it'll depend a bit on the funding profile from the federal government.
How impactful will the increase in state dollars be in the coming months?
Well, it's very helpful, but with tuition constrained, we're at about a 4% increase in our overall budget because we're 75% tuition and 25% from state appropriations. So when people see the state appropriation number, it doesn't translate to a full increase. But we're very pleased that they've turned around a very negative trend, I think not simply for Michigan State, but for the state of Michigan, because knowledge is power in the 21st century. And it takes an extraordinary amount of talent in order to be successful. And it's been very, very difficult for some Michigan families.
Luanna K. Simon is the president of Michigan State University. It's been great to have you on the program today. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Have a good year.